Welcome to Test All Things. Test All Things is an outreach of Tower to Truth Ministries, and I'm your host, Fran Sankey. You can find us on the web at towertotruth.net. Test All Things is a Bible discernment, evangelistic program dedicated to creating an awareness of and biblical answers to false religious teachings opposing Christianity today. Today I have Bob Anderson on the phone with me. Bob is from the Pittsburgh area. He's the Pennsylvania director of Watchman Fellowship. Watchman Fellowship is an evangelical countercult apologetic ministry providing research and evangelism and help in the area of new religious movements, cults, the occult, and world religions. Today, the topic on our plate is Islam and terrorism, and it just doesn't seem to go away. You don't have to turn the dial on the TV too far to see a suicide bomber or Islamic bloodshed taking place somewhere in the world, especially in the Middle East. Bob is going to give us a little bit of his expertise today to help us understand what motivates these people and why all the war. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Well, thank you, Fran. It's a pleasure and privilege to be with you today.
Bob, just generally speaking, why should Christians be concerned about Islam?
Well, of course, there are a number of reasons. First of all, we might say that it's the fastest growing religion on the face of the earth today, with an estimated 1.3 billion members, people that believe in this religion. It's also, throughout its history, it's been a religion of the sword, spread by the sword and upheld by the sword, and yet they persist with this incredible lie that Islam is a religion of peace. It just isn't so, and of course, if you dare to criticize them as a religion of violence, they may cut off your head to prove they're a religion of peace.
Yeah, now I have heard that Islam means peace. Is that accurate?
No, that's not accurate at all. It means submission or surrender, and of course, a Muslim is one who surrenders to Islam.
Okay, now, talking about terrorism and Muslims, are most Muslims terrorists?
Oh, no, no, not by any stretch of the imagination. It's estimated anywhere from 10 to 15% may believe in jihad. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that they're terrorists just because they believe in jihad, but if they, but by the way, if you took 10 to 15% of 1.3 billion people, that's an awful lot of people that have the potential to be terrorists.
That is a lot of people. How did Islam begin? What's its roots?
Well, of course, you have to go back to the Prophet Muhammad, back who was born in 570 A.D. When he was a young man of about 25, he married a rich merchant, a caravan owner, and Khadijah. And then, of course, by the time he was 40, he began to receive revelations from the so-called angel Gabriel. And at first, he thought it was an evil spirit or a jinn. In fact, he used to go into convulsions of some sort and on laying on the ground, and reportedly it sometimes even had foam coming from his mouth. He thought it was an evil spirit, but Khadijah was able to convince him that it was of God, and so he took her word for that, and so today, because of a woman, we have Islam. Just kidding.
Okay, you better watch what you say.
Yes. But no, that's basically how it started, through these revelations from Gabriel. And, of course, it has a long history of after his death, of course, even before his death, basically spreading this religion by the sword.
So would Muhammad himself have been a terrorist?
Well, you know, I don't know how you would define that word, but, you know, certainly he said, put a sword to their throat. If they don't convert, kill them. So you can, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Now, that's interesting. If you just joined us, I'm speaking with Bob Anderson from Watchman Fellowship. If you want to contact Bob, you can email him at randerson@watchman.org. That's randerson@watchman.org. Or you can send him some mail at P.O. Box 350. That's P.O. Box 350, Murraysville, PA 15668. Now, you talked about an angel and revelation. That kind of draws in my mind something about Mormonism.
Well, yeah, there are similarities. For example, both had a prophet, quote-unquote, Muhammad, Joseph Smith. Both religions claimed angelic revelation, the angel Gabriel to Muhammad, the angel Moroni to Joseph Smith. Both were supposedly given holy books, the Quran, the Book of Mormon. Both deny the universality of sin. They underplay sin in both religions. Both believed in polygamy. And interestingly enough, there was a book written back in the last century here, back in the 1900s, called Mormonism, the Islam of the West. It's interesting also that both religions had some part, at least, in things that happened, death to many people on the date September the 11th. Of course, we're all familiar with September 11, 2001, when the Muslim terrorists attacked the Twin Towers in New York, but not too many people are aware that also the date September 11, 1857 was big in Mormon history, and this is they've done features on this on the History Channel, when a wagon train from Arkansas on the way to California was slaughtered in Utah, killing 120 men, women, and children. So there are a lot of parallels between these two religions.
Yeah, I see so. What is the ultimate goal of Islam?
Well, as we said, the ultimate goal is world domination. It's very clear. There are over 100 scriptures in the Quran, or verses in the Quran, that that encourage violence and bloodshed to take over the world and spread this religion.
In other countries, third world countries or the Middle East countries, do they promote and encourage this terrorism in any way? Actually,
of course, they say it's really. First of all, let me back up and say that Islam claims to be a religion of peace. Well, if this is true, then we should have peace throughout the Middle East. But the fact of the matter is that during the years 1948 to 1973, there were no more than 80 Islamic revolutions, 30 of them successful, including the murder of 22 heads of state. Now, again, if this is a religion of peace, as it claims, then why do we have such bloodshed? We had, in fact, if you look at history, you'll find there are Muslims killing more Muslims than anybody else. You had the Iran-Iraq War, you had the Gulf War of 1991, you had over the war in Algeria where they killed over 120,000 people. Saddam Hussein himself spread over 50,000 tons of poison gas on the Iranians during that Iran-Iraq War, where there were more people killed than in World War One. So again, violence is a big part of this.
So the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
How about at what age does training begin to be an Islamic martyr?
Well, of course, when we think of martyrs, we think of men between the ages of 21 and 45, but actually it starts from childhood. There are many cases, even on Algerian television, Al Jazeera television, I should say, where youngsters are, in fact, it was just widespread throughout the Internet not too long ago about a television program that was sponsored by Hamas, where the Palestinian children were encouraged to, they used a character that looked much like Mickey Mouse. And Mickey Mouse, of course, would tell them, they should do things like drinking their milk and reciting their daily prayers, but it also encouraged violence and the destruction of Israel. And then finally, that Mickey Mouse character was killed off, and guess who did it? They blame the Jews for killing off Mickey Mouse. So, again, this starts at childhood. It's not just adult males.
If you just joined us, I'm speaking with Bob Anderson from Watchman Fellowship. You can contact him by email, randerson@watchman.org, or by the mail at P.O. Box 350, Marysville, PA, 15668. How do Muslims in third world countries, the Middle East, how do they feel towards America?
Well, it depends. We only hear the bad things. The fact of the matter is, in a country like Iran, the young people, are very pro-American. They don't support Ahmadinejad at all, although he is was appointed by the mullahs. They do have elections over there, but it's kind of like the old Russian elections almost. I mean, it's the mullah, when he puts his stamp of approval on the candidate, that's who gets elected. And so Ahmadinejad is the ruler, but the young people over there seem to be very pro-American and want more of American ideas and so forth. So, again, it's kind of a mixed bag. But I would say, in general, most of the people are being taught to hate not only Israel, but America as the great Satan.
What about countries like Saudi Arabia, or maybe Sudan, Afghanistan? What happens if a Muslim would become, say, a Christian or convert to Judaism?
Well, they still have in Saudi Arabia today, Chop Chop Square, where if you're convert to any other religion, your head's basically chopped off if you leave. In other words, if you are a Muslim and you leave Islam. Now, of course, in most Muslim countries, you're not permitted to to worship, at least not outwardly, although there's a great revival going on of Jesus Christ throughout, but it's an underground revival. In other words, if you profess Islam and you convert to any other religion in most of these Muslim countries, you take the chance of being killed, having your head cut off. But despite all that, there are pockets where great revival is taking place.
That's great news.
Yep.
Yeah, again, talking with Bob Anderson from Watchman Fellowship, randerson@watchman.org, if you want to contact him by email. Bob, what motivates a Muslim to blow himself up in a Jewish marketplace? I mean, what's the carrot at the end of the stick?
See, there's only one way in Islam that you can know for sure that you're going to heaven or to paradise, and that is by dying a martyr's death. Otherwise, it's a religion, basically, as all basic world religions are, it's a religion of works. You do, and you never know if you've done enough. But by dying as a martyr, you have the assurance that you will go directly to paradise, of course, for the men, where they will enjoy good wine and 72 virgins.
So this is a works-oriented religion?
Absolutely, and you never know if you've done enough. And you can ask any Muslim, and do you have assurance of salvation? They have none. There is none, because they really don't know until the last day, which is the resurrection day in Islam, when your deeds are weighed in the balance. If the good deeds outweigh the bad deeds, then you go to paradise. Otherwise, you go to hell.
That's a lot to have on you. How about at the family of the so-called martyr? I've heard that they may receive some monetary contribution.
Oh, it depends on the country. Now, in Saudi Arabia, they hold telethons like we have here in the United States to raise money. Of course, these oil-rich princes wouldn't have to. They could do it themselves. But the Saudi government pays $5,333 to the families of suicide bombers.
How many Muslims are in America?
Well, it's really hard to say for sure. I've seen estimates anywhere from 7 to 9 million. However, with illegal immigration being what it is in the day and age in which we live, it's hard to really know for sure.
Now, is this due to just immigration, or are there Americans actually becoming Muslims at an alarming rate?
Well, there are converts, of course, to Islam, but I would say that there's a number of reasons for the increase. Certainly, over the last number of years, freer immigration policies, plus the fact that Muslims have large families. Number one, they don't believe in abortion, so the average American family has about 1.6 children, whereas the average Muslim family has 6.5 children. So you could see at that rate, it wouldn't take very long for Muslims to become dominant in this country, where they're becoming dominant, for example, over in England, which some claim that England could become the first Western Muslim nation.
Now, when we're talking about Islam, are we talking about the Nation of Islam?
No, that's an entirely different group. It's the Nation of Islam is headed up by a man by the name of Louis Farrakhan, but the roots of it go back to the 1930s in Detroit. I should say that it's a black radical Muslim group, would be considered like a Christian cult, though this would be a Muslim cult. They believe that the white man, well, there's even been a break in there, because it was originally started by a man by the name of Wallace Fard, who some believe may have even been a white man or had a lot of white blood in him. But it was taken over by one of his converts, Elijah Poole, who became Elijah Muhammad. And then Elijah Muhammad was later succeeded by Louis Farrakhan. But there was a split, so there are actually a couple of different groups in there. But Farrakhan is the head of the larger group.
Okay. Now, when I drive around, I just see mosques in places where I never saw them before. Is this my imagination, or are there more mosques today?
Well, no. In fact, the number of mosques here in the United States grew by over 25% last year alone. It's estimated there's over 1,700, maybe as many as 2,000, but I've seen at least a 1,700 figure of mosques here in the United States.
If you just join me, I'm talking with Bob Anderson from Watchman Fellowship. You can contact Bob at randerson@watchman.org, or you can mail him at P.O. Box 350, Marysville, PA 15668. Now, Bob, Islam in America, it seems to be relatively peaceful. You know, is there a difference in violent tendencies where Islam is in the minority religion?
Yeah, well, of course, you have to realize that Islam is broken down into two houses, the House of Islam and the House of War, Dar al-Harb, it's called in Arabic. But Dar al-Harb, the House of War, it was where they don't rule. Now, there can be, you know, periods of truce and peace, but true peace will only come upon Islamic domination. But when they're in a minority, the Quran permits them, you know, to put on an air until they become to the point where, you know, they become the dominant religion.
How about the Islamic God, Allah? Who is Allah? Is Allah just another name for the God of the Bible?
Well, not really. You know, a lot of people say, isn't it the same God we worship? Well, there are so many differences. First of all, the God of the Bible, Yahweh, is a Trinitarian God. The God of the Quran, Allah, is a Unitarian God. The God of the Bible, Yahweh, loves the Jew. They're his chosen people, the apple of his eye. The God of the Quran, Allah, hates the Jew and wants them dead. I mean, these could not possibly be the same gods or God. So there are so many differences between the Quran and the Bible that, you know, even a short, you know, reading of the Quran versus the Bible will show this.
Now, in the Bible, in the New Testament, 1 John 4:8 in particular, it says that God is love. Is this one of the foremost attributes of Allah?
Well, no. You know, we look as Christians, we look at God in terms of his attributes. God is love, God is mercy, God is this and that. The Muslim doesn't really look at God that way. It's more in terms of his will. If Allah wills this, it will be done. So, you know, there are many, many attributes of Allah in the Quran. But, for example, you'll never see Allah mentioned as Father. This is totally foreign to the Quran. It's more, they see him more in terms, like I say, of his attributes. Now, there are 99 different titles or attributes to Allah, but certainly Father, and a loving Father, is not one of them.
So there's no way for a Muslim to have a, say, personal relationship with Allah?
Oh, no, this is another foreign concept. Again, you would never see this term or this expression ever used for a Muslim. There is no personal relationship. In fact, Christianity is the only religion that I really know of that where it offers man a personal relationship with the living God. You won't find that in any other religion.
If you just joined us, I'm speaking with Bob Anderson from Watchman Fellowship. You can contact Bob by email at randerson@watchman.org. How about the Quran? Does the Quran promote violence, or is this just a figment of some fundamental Christian's imagination?
Well, there's over 100 scriptures in the Quran that encourage violence and bloodshed. For example, in the Quran, Surah 5. Now, the Quran is broken down into 114 chapters called surahs. In Surah chapter 5, verse 82, it describes the inevitable enmity between Islam and the rest of the world. Quote, strongest, or now you have to realize there are different translations of the Quran, like there are different translations of the Bible. Strongest, one says, most violent among men in enmity to the believers. When they talk about believers, they're talking about Islam. Will thou find the Jews and the pagans? One translation says the Jews and the polytheists because of their misinterpretation of the Trinity. Here's another one. Surah chapter 9, verse 5 says, then fight and slay the pagans or the idolaters wherever you find them and seize them and beleaguer them and lie in wait for them in every stratagem or ambush of war. So nations, no matter how mighty, which would include the United States, the Quran says must be fought until they embrace Islam. And, you know, again, as I say, there's over 100 of these types of scriptures throughout the Quran, through the verses.
What does the Quran say about the Bible? Stay away from it?
Well, no. It says it is the Word of God. That's very interesting, because you can go, you know, in fact, when we do our presentation, the last part of our presentation includes witnessing to Muslims. And, of course, one of the ways that you can witness to a Muslim after you have witnessed to him your personal testimony and talked to him about the Bible, you can go into the Quran and show him many of the contradictions verses in the Quran which contradict each other. For example, it does say that the Bible is the Word of God. Well, you know, something cannot be what it is not. In other words, a rose cannot not be a rose, or otherwise it'd be a contradiction. So if the Bible is the Word of God, it cannot not be the Word of God. And it says, we have sent down this message, and we will protect it. So, you know, is man greater than God or Allah? You might point out to the Muslim. So if the Quran says that the Bible is the Word of God, how can it not be the Word of God, in other words? So, and again, there are many, many, many contradictions throughout the Quran. You know, for example, it says that we're to believe the Gospels. It actually praises the God. Now, many people don't realize this, but the Quran does recognize the Bible, at least the Torah, the first five books of Moses, the Psalms of David, the Gospels of Jesus. And, you know, again, if it accepts the Gospels, now many Muslims will say, well, the Bible's been perverted, corrupted. Well, if that's true, then why does it say that the Bible is the Word of God? Again, is man greater than God? Could man change what Allah has sent down? So, you know, again, you have to be able to show them these different contradictions so you can inject the idea of contradiction.
Absolutely. How about Jesus? What does the Quran say about him?
Well, the Quran calls Jesus, in fact, there's 93 honorific titles, 93 verses, about Jesus, or Isa, including more honorific titles than Muhammad. For example, Jesus is called born of a virgin. He's said to lead a sinless life. He is said to do miracles. He even has the title Messiah. Now, you have to point out to the Muslim, nowhere is Muhammad spoken of a virgin birth, sinless life, miraculous works, and certainly not called the Messiah. So how can Muhammad possibly be greater than Jesus when he has all these honorific titles and does things that Muhammad never did?
Good point. Just very briefly, what are a few things we can remember to help us witness more effectively to a Muslim?
Well, of course, there's a number of things that we want to remember when witnessing to Muslims. In fact, we have a track with 10 different, what I call, do's and don'ts of witnessing to Muslims. And I don't think we have time to go through all of them, but just, you know, bringing to light a few of these things would be the fact that when witnessing to a Muslim, first of all, you want to keep it gender specific. In other words, man to man, not and woman to woman, not man to woman, and vice versa. You also never want to denigrate Muhammad or the Quran. You always want to give them your personal testimony. You want to talk about Jesus. You want to talk about his miraculous life. You want to talk about the fact that, you know, the Bible can be trusted, that it there's no way that, in other words, you could ask them to show you the contradictions of the Bible. They can't do it. But again, use the Word of God. Give your testimony. Reason, but don't argue. Ask questions about forgiveness, about heaven, about what the Bible teaches, and so forth. And also pray out loud with your Muslim friends. And, you know, ask to pray for their personal needs. Don't be surprised if you're rejected at first, but, you know, you want to make a friend of them. You can give them treats, but never pork or alcohol. Use your right hand in giving gifts. And so these are just a few of the things that you want to keep in mind, you know, when witnessing. And treat the Bible with respect. Don't ever put it on the floor or make jokes about it. That's just kind of a brief, quick overview.
Okay, if you're interested in a CD of this two-part interview about Islam and terrorism, get in touch with me. My phone number is 610-513-5525. That's 610-513-5525. And don't forget to tune in next week for another apologetic issue facing Christianity today. And remember, don't just believe everything you hear, but test all things.